Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Welcome to Real Science Radio's program on the Great American Eclipse.
That's right. Today we'll talk through the coming eclipse.
Oh.
Big, huge event. But first, some of the science contrasting creation versus evolution.
Ooh.
That is the materialist, atheistic, stellar, and planetary evolution claims.
They use that term evolution, right? Even for astronomy.
They do. They do.
So this is a creation versus evolution show on the eclipse where we're going to first talk about the science before we get to the actual August 21st eclipse. When you came in, Fred, you warned me, make sure you've got good viewing glasses.
That's right, because you could actually go blind looking at a solar eclipse because the sun's rays can still definitely damage your eyes. In fact, NASA put out some warning that make sure you buy the right kind of sunglasses. So I asked you, because I know you're going up to Nebraska, right?
Yeah, that's
right.
Because
it's going to make its way through Nebraska. And they warned to make sure you buy the right kind of solar glasses.
Yes, and at Denver Bible Church, in fact, we've purchased eclipse viewing glasses to distribute to the congregation, especially for kids. Being a homeschool church, you know, we have so many kids. And even though we're a small congregation, it's the little church that could. For those who are staying in the Denver area and not traveling to that narrow strip of totality, Denver's going to get, I think, over 90% coverage of the sun.
Yeah, so you only see about 10% of the sun for a brief period of time.
Yeah, so people are going to want to look. So you really have to be careful. Also, Homeland Security is involved, all levels of law enforcement, first responders are preparing. Why is that? Because, Fred, from Oregon to South Carolina, about 20 miles wide, this narrow band, tens of millions of people are going to be going to see totality.
Yeah, and they've listed, you know, a lot of the websites have listed the major cities. For example, Casper, Wyoming.
Yeah.
That's one of those places, if you go there and you watch the eclipse, you'll probably definitely want to then just come home. I lived in Casper, Wyoming for 2 years.
Well, we just went to the Grand Tetons, to Yellowstone.
Oh, that's beautiful up there.
Yeah, what a beautiful state, Wyoming. But you can't get a hotel room. The very few where people have canceled are being relisted for $2,000 for two nights.
Yeah, so the eclipse is going through the Grand Tetons?
Yeah.
That'd be super
cool. It's up that way, yeah.
You already have a beautiful view of that area. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. But it's going to be very difficult to get there and to get back. The gasoline industry is stocking for this like it's a 4th of July weekend on steroids. So if you're traveling, don't get stranded. Don't run out of food. Don't run out of water. You know, bring enough sunscreen and hats, and especially take care of your kids. Don't let them look at the sun before the eclipse, during, after. You got to really monitor them. During totality, you could look without glasses, but then all of a sudden, say 2.5 minutes or so, depending on where you are, then that sun's going to appear. You got to be careful.
But there won't be a totality here in Denver.
No.
So you don't want to be looking at the sun.
No, not at all. So some of the science first and the creation and evolution aspects of the mathematical ratios that enable this eclipse in the first place. And then, Fred, if we could talk about the major solar discoveries of the most basic details about the sun in the solar system that point to the creator and that disprove the claims of materialist origins.
That's right. And I know you've got a great video, right, on the Big Bang.
Oh, I love
and
that.
One of the parts in there is about the nebular hypothesis. And this is the atheistic view of the origin of the solar system. And they claim that a swirling gas cloud eventually condensed and formed our sun, the planets, the moon, and so on.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, there are so many problems, Fred. For example, the angle of the spin of the sun's rotation compared to the planets orbiting the sun, big problem. The amount of spin of the sun, the angular momentum that the sun is missing almost 100% of the spin that it should have. And you know what else is interesting? The fact that we can see a total solar eclipse at all. I mean, how is it that we can see, how is it, Fred, that we could see a total solar eclipse?
Well, it's really cool. It's because the sun is 400 times larger than the moon and 400 times further away. That's what allows us to see it. I mean, it's remarkably, you know,
fine-tuned.
Rare. There's no way that
it's
this has happened by chance.
Tuned. It's one of the many examples of the fine-tuning of the solar system. So let's dig into this first one regarding the angle of the sun's rotation. The atheists had hoped that it would line up with the ecliptic. You know, one their theory was developing over the past few centuries. Well, if it all condensed from a spinning gas cloud, it should all share similar characteristics of their spin, their angular momentum.
It's a law of physics.
Yes, but it turns out that the sun is 7 degrees off of the ecliptic. That is a massive problem.
And how did that happen?
Well, think about it. If the atheist, the materialist, the methodological naturalist, if they were right, and you got this swirling gas cloud condensing, then everything's swirling with the same characteristics, right? And so then somehow you've got to take the planets and their orbits collectively and change them by 7 degrees compared to the sun. I mean, the planets have enormous angular momentum, even Mercury and Venus, Earth. But think of Jupiter and Neptune, those gas giants. How do you take all the planets, which are all over the place in the solar system, you know, on one side of the sun, on the other side, and you're going to bend all of their orbits or rotate them 7 degrees? Or alternatively, you take the sun, which is a ball of gas, and you're going to tilt that thing.
Yeah. It's the liberalism of angular momentum. That's the physics, right? Instead of the conservation of angular momentum.
Right. It's the let your angular momentum do whatever it wants to do.
To satisfy your worldview.
So that is a problem, one problem, with the materialist explanation. When they give their programs about viewing the eclipse, they're not going to remind people that the sun's rotation is off what their theory claimed it would be. They're not going to remind people. But I like to remind people, as you and I have done, about NASA's planet guy who admits that
I remember this one.
Their theory of planet formation has failed. And this is quite a quote from Mike Brown. He's an astronomer, right?
Yep, at Caltech. And he was talking about a lot of problems, not just this tilt problem.
He was talking about many other problems.
So many other problems. And he said this: we thought we understood the formation of planetary systems pretty deeply. It was a really beautiful theory and clearly, thoroughly wrong.
And he's NASA's planetary database manager. So he's a big shot. You know, we brag about our Google rankings probably too often, Fred. But one of the ones we've never mentioned is our ranking for the origin of the solar system. If someone is wondering if there's evidence against the nebular hypothesis, if they search for that term, evidence against the nebular hypothesis, out of hundreds of thousands of possible pages, Google ranks us up there on page one, which is pretty cool. But if they Google something like solar system origin problems or solar system formation problems, Real Science Radio is ranked number one out of 2 million possible
2 million
pages.
Possible.
Yeah, that's just so fun.
That is super cool. And for any new listeners who are tuning in, you know, maybe because they're wanting to prepare for the eclipse and get this great information from our show.
Yeah.
But if you go to rsr.org/rankings, we have plenty of other examples. And here's just a few.
Yeah.
Big Bang predictions. That's number one
Out of millions.
Out of millions.
If so people want to Google for the predictions of the Big Bang Theory.
Yep, Big Bang predictions.
Wow, Real Science Radio is number one?
Yep.
Come on, Fred.
Yep.
Wow.
Evidence against the Big Bang. Numero uno.
Number one out of millions.
Creation science predictions. We've made a few on this show, right, that have come true over the years.
Quite a few.
We've been able to confirm them you know, 3, 4, or 5 years down the road.
And what a list we have.
Yep.
Yeah.
Number one out of millions.
Ah.
And then here, I like this one. A lot of people, you know, might not think much of this one, but the 360-day year. I'd say if you're not familiar with that topic, go to rsr.org.
We hear from people around the world, and they're searching for information on the 360-day year or 360-day calendar, and they find us right at the top, number one.
Great article.
So let's go to now a second huge piece of evidence for creation. And against the nebular hypothesis, that's the claim that this all formed from a spinning gas cloud. The second piece of evidence is that the sun is missing nearly 100% of the spin that natural formation would have imparted.
That's right. And there's that one atheist guy, Isaac Newton.
Atheist?
Oh, wait, he wasn't an atheist?
No.
He is a creation scientist.
Yes.
He actually spent more time studying the Bible than he did science. But anyways,
Young Earth. Creationist.
Yeah, young Earth creationist, widely regarded, I'd say, as maybe the most brilliant scientist ever.
Yeah, he's considered to be that.
Yeah. So Newton rejected the claim that gravity could condense a gas cloud into our sun and its orbiting planets.
Wow.
This is the discoverer of gravity.
You know, we should include a link in this show summary to the Newton Project. Britain has this online repository of all of Isaac Newton's extant writings, and we could link to his letter of February 11th, 1693, where he made this clear that swirling gas, gravity, would not form a star and planets.
So today's atheists, they reject Newton's insight.
Yeah.
They have to develop all these secondary assumptions to explain why the sun is rotating at the wrong angle.
Mm.
And then they have to explain why it is only about 1% of the spin energy or the angular momentum of the solar system.
Yeah, so it should have 99%. So the sun is massive, you know, literally, it's massive. And it has about 98 to 99% of the mass of the solar system. So if the spinning gas cloud condensed to form the sun, then it should have about 99% of the mass of that cloud, which would become the sun. And that means it should have 99% of that spinning angular momentum of the whole system. But it only has 1% about of the spin.
Wait a minute. It's supposed to have 99% and it only has
1%.
It's not like 96% or 95%.
No, it's like 1%.
It's like the opposite. It's like the inverse.
Yes. And the planets, which comprise less than 2% of the mass of the solar system, they should have less than 2% of the angular momentum. But Fred, they have almost 99%. So these are massive observations. They're really, really big discoveries, and they are the opposite of what the atheistic origins folks have claimed, and they don't tell people about this stuff. It's hidden. It's not on NPR Science Friday. It's not on the Discovery Channel, National Geographic. I mean, hardly ever do they list all these astounding contradictions to their own assumptions.
So again, the atheists are rejecting wisdom. Isaac Newton was right. I mean, you couldn't get more plain as day as this. The sun is supposed to have 99%, yet it only has 1. The planets are supposed to have less than 2%, you know, near the 1%, yet they have 99%.
So
everything's upside down.
So it's not the creationists who don't make good science predictions. It's the atheists. They have a dismal track record, and predictions are the currency of hard science. And that's why when Google ranks us number one for, like, Big Bang predictions, that is significant, Fred, because we give the actual history and the colossal failures of the prediction of these atheist models of origins.
So you're listening to Real Science Radio and not fake science radio, because that's what you get with all the atheists.
Yeah.
And, you know, and frankly, a lot of the stuff NASA puts out and, you know, definitely the secular science. You're not going to read about this on Science Daily or any of those secular sites.
No, generally not. Right. It's suppressed in the extreme. Mm-hmm. So folks could read or listen to our list of solar system formation problems. But since we're talking about the sun, the moon, and the earth, Fred, why don't we list a few of these quickly?
Okay. Well, for one, planets would not form because, as admitted in Nature magazine in 2013, according to the standard theory, dust grains orbiting newborn stars should spiral into those stars rather than accrete to form planets.
Okay, that's the journal Nature just a few years ago. There's so many examples like this where they say, you know, really, this theory shouldn't work.
Yeah.
It really shouldn't work, but lo and behold, there's Jupiter. There are these planets. There's the sun. There's the moon. Okay, how about this? Even if the laws of physics enabled planet formation, which they contradicted, 4.5 billion years is far too little time to build up large planets. And most of the stuff that we reference, Fred, most of the discoveries are from mainstream science institutions. Most of it, even a lot of the analysis, is published in leading scientific journals. And we link to all this stuff.
Yeah. When we refute this stuff, I'd say 95% we're linking to their own articles.
Yes.
How about this one, Bob? Uranus rotates perpendicularly and Venus rotates backwards.
Yes. They violate the laws of angular momentum. Of course, you could come up with wild secondary and tertiary and quaduciary, I don't know what goes next, explanations, rescue devices to say, well, here's how this would happen in this one instance. And then you find out there's hundreds of instances that they have to make wild secondary and tertiary assumptions to explain why the solar system doesn't look like their theory predicted it would look like.
Yeah, it's amazing. Because, again, I like the one, you know, Venus rotates backwards. I mean, how do they explain that?
Yeah.
It totally goes against the physics of their proposal.
Real
it does
tough.
Not work.
And,
it's not even a good hypothesis.
And when you add to it that the sun hardly rotates at all, it's almost standing still compared to the planets, and that the sun is tilted at the wrong angle, I mean, it all falls apart. And no wonder astronomer Mike Brown, who he was even talking about other problems, not all these problems, but he said our theory of planetary formation has clearly failed.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful story and it failed.
Looks great in the textbooks. It fools a lot of people, but it's just totally wrong.
How about this? We've talked about the transient events in the solar system. If the whole thing was 4.5 billion years old, should we be seeing all these very astounding things happening? Such rapid changes, like our moon outgassing, when the moon is supposed to be 4.5 billion years old.
Yeah.
And they say, well, golly,
we're just really lucky, Bob. We're getting to see all this stuff that, you know, over millions and billions of years.
Yeah.
But we're lucky in this one period of time to see that. All right. Remember that video? This is an Earth transit event. When that rock fell from that formation. And
this Arches National Park. This arch is millions of years.
Wow, how lucky we are to get to witness that.
Yeah.
Just think of the millions of years of, you know, the old cavemen. And
I think we documented like 80 arches falling in the past half century or so. And they're supposed to have formed over hundreds of thousands or millions of years.
Yep.
How could they be falling so quickly and have 80 formed in the last half century? No, they're not forming. At the rate they're collapsing, the Earth's transient events are just those on our planet. And all the planets have these things going on. So then how about the comets that are made up of millions of rounded boulders?
That sounds like a prediction I've heard of in the past.
That's right. That's a prediction.
Some guy named Dr. Walt Brown.
Yes. Can you say Fountains of the Great Deep?
Yep.
I think that's pronounced HPT.
Hydroplate theory.
Yes. So rounded boulders form on Earth in floods. They don't form out in deep space, not in the Kuiper Belt, not in the Oort cloud. And they stunned the astronomers who got close-up pictures of them. And we now know, like on Comet 67P, comets have millions of rounded boulders, large, some like as big as your car. And so these are all examples of amazing, fabulous discoveries that falsify the atheist model of origins and affirm the book of Genesis and
absolutely
its many implications.
And, you know, NASA for 45 years, which is a long time, they've been collecting lunar dust, right?
That's so nice of them.
Yeah, it is nice of them. Yeah.
For us creationists.
And what's funny
Thank
is
you, NASA.
It shows that miles, I'm telling you, not miles. Inches, should have accumulated over billions of years.
On the surface of the moon?
Yep.
And it's the old moon dust argument,
yep.
which is 100% valid.
Absolutely.
NASA was afraid that there'd be meters or hundreds of meters of dust on the surface of the moon in billions of years. Young Earth creationists were like, no, don't worry about that. And they get there. Now, they knew because of the missions they sent up previous to the manned Apollo missions. They knew that, okay, there's only a little bit of dust. But they sent it up with those pods, those feet, remember?
Yeah.
Because they thought it might sink. And in fact, they stated that that was one of the fears, that the lunar landing module might sink in the dust. That's another great argument.
It is. We had a great interview with Dr. Richter. Remember that? He was involved.
Dr. Henry Richter, NASA scientist.
Yep, one of the early
scientists.
And
others.
Jet Propulsion Laboratory that became
fabulous.
NASA.
Okay, so you mentioned the moon with the upcoming eclipse. How about the sun itself? Fred, how about just the formation of the sun? There are so many problems that are admitted, too, from time to time by the secular scientific world, these intractable physics problems with the formation of a star, including our own star, the sun.
So, Bob, consider this. What about when a gas cloud is condensing?
Okay.
So
it's shrinking.
It's shrinking.
By its own mutual gravity.
So if you think about that, it would increase the pressure and the temperature.
Of the cloud itself.
Of the cloud, which should expand the cloud, right?
Oh, yeah. That is really a problem because gravity is a weak force.
Yep.
And it's not going to overcome the increasing temperature, the increasing pressure as the cloud condenses. That's how they form stars. So, Fred, then they end up cheating. They say, well, you have this gas cloud, and there is a supernova somewhere where a nearby star explodes, and that pressure wave condenses.
It solves their problem.
Yeah, it starts this next star forming. Well, that's cheating.
Well, yeah.
We're talking about the origin of stars.
Yeah.
So you can't have stars already in existence.
Were there seven moons flying by at that time?
That's a funny one.
Sorry to pick on, you know, one of our crazy
catastrophic plate tectonics. So, yeah, they have a difficulty explaining how stars would form because it violates the basic laws of physics. There's another problem with the rotation. Because, Fred, you know how we point out that our sun is almost standing still? Well, if you take the average swirling nebula, whatever it is out there in the galaxy, out there in the universe, say like the Eagle Nebula, and you begin to, it's massive, right? Could you imagine a gas cloud in space? How big it would be? And have all the mass enough to form a star. And then you're taking all those particles that are spinning around their mutual center of gravity, and you begin to condense them all like a figure skater pulling in her arms. And because it's being condensed, you're conserving angular momentum, the spinning becomes more and more rapid.
Yeah.
And then as it really condenses, which it wouldn't because of the laws of physics, but let's pretend that we're atheists. If it continues to condense, it's going to spin faster and faster and faster until the average star that formed from a nebula would be spinning faster than any object in the universe. And faster than the laws of physics could permit it to spin, it would fly apart.
Yeah, they'd have to start all over.
Yes, right. Start all
never over. Never-ending cycle.
Yes, exactly.
So, but every now and then they get lucky and it just forms a star.
Yeah, there's also the magnetic strength problem. The journal Science published what amounts to a parallel of the angular momentum problem. Here's what they wrote. Interstellar clouds are permeated by magnetic fields that we believe to be effectively frozen to the contracting gas. As the gas cloud collapses to form a star, the magnetic field lines should be compressed ever closer together, giving rise to enormous magnetic fields long before the collapse is completed. These fields would resist further collapse, preventing the formation of the expected star. Yet, we observe no evidence of strong fields in the stars, allegedly, right?
Yeah.
And the stars do form, apparently unaware of our theoretical differences. That's circular reasoning, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They're assuming their conclusion, even though there are so many laws of physics that prohibit their conclusions.
Yeah, and speaking of circular reasoning, they assume stars have already been formed or in the process of formation.
Yeah.
Just like the origin of species, right?
Yeah.
Darwin had to assume that the
species already existed.
Yeah.
They do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Even with the formation of the universe, Fred, now they assume the existence of the multiverse, an infinite number of universes. Every time they want to explain complexity, they end up introducing
more complexity.
Every single time. And the things they want to explain the origin of, like genes, they begin with the modification of existing genes. Every time, every time, they start with the thing they're supposed to explain already existing.
So, Bob, here's some more problems. And you can go to, by the way, rsr.org/star-formation-problems. So how about Population 3 stars, which are first-generation stars? They can't find any. They're missing. It's kind of like their dark matter. Where's the dark matter?
Yeah, the dark matter's missing. The first-generation stars are missing. How about the supernova remnants? Remember that?
Yeah.
The stage 3. Could you explain that? And then we'll have to conclude this on next week's show and talk
more
about...
Well, if the universe is billions of years old, we should see stage 3
supernova remnants.
But we don't. We only see about what we'd expect given our... timeline, right?
If the universe is less than 10,000 years old, then when a star explodes, the debris field, so to speak, gets to a certain size. Well, it should continue to expand indefinitely, and we should be able to find stage 3 supernova remnants. That's been predicted. They've been looking for them for decades, and they haven't been finding them.
Yep. And there's
So there's those kinds of problems with the whole stellar formation theory, that whole claim.
Maybe the supernova stage ones are just, you know, transient events that they just happen to now start exploding.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that we could see them.
Yeah,
in our small 10,000-year window out of billions of years.
Yeah, and of course that would contradict their theory
Absolutely.
Of stellar evolution.
They totally expect to see all these supernova remnants in stage 3.
Yeah, and missing... The population 3. It's weird. They call it population 3, but by that they mean the first generation of stars. And so those are missing too. And the Blue Star Assembly Line. There's so many great examples of how what we actually discover in the real universe contradicts what they expect to find in a Big Bang universe.
Yeah. And in your Big Bang video, you've got that great video clip from Fermilabs. Of the scientists. He's actually explaining a problem and admitting to the problem of missing antimatter.
Yeah.
And why it's a problem and why they expect to find
antimatter. Right. Like our sun is made of matter, the planets, the Milky Way galaxy. In fact, every galaxy we know of, they're all made of matter, not antimatter. Antimatter is not science fiction. It's real. We make antimatter in the lab. Antimatter was predicted by theory. And we understand the positrons and the antiprotons and so on. Well, when you convert energy to matter, as in the Big Bang, half of that should be antimatter and the other half matter exactly. E equals mc squared. It should be exactly equal parts, and it's not. In fact, we don't have antimatter stars, antimatter solar systems, antimatter galaxies. They've been looking for this stuff for decades. And it's empirically excluded. They have not found it. It doesn't exist. So these are bits and pieces that end up forming mountains of evidence against the Big Bang and the nebular hypothesis.
That's right. So, Bob, in closing, I just wanted to mention kind of a bittersweet news here. Bittersweet in a sense, bitter that we lost a great creation friend, Dr. Ed Boudreaux. He's the... He headed Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship for quite a few years.
Yes.
He's gone to be with the Lord. That's the sweet part. He
got a PhD in chemistry many years ago, and he
taught at New Orleans.
And he testified in a very high-profile court case about creation and evolution.
Yeah, in Louisiana. That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
So he recently passed away, and he's with the Lord now.
And what a dear friend.
Yep.
And it's been an honor that he was a Katrina transplant.
That's right.
From Katrina. The hurricane.
One of the advantages of Katrina was we got to have Ed Boudreaux and his family up with us.
Yeah,
helped run Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, you know, not long after he came up here.
Yeah, so he didn't miss a beat, in fact.
He didn't. He didn't stop.
And so now he's gone to be with the Lord and with his wife, who preceded him. Mm-hmm. So
she preceded him about, I think, about 6 months ago.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we'll miss him, but we'll all see him again.
That's right.
In fact, we'll all see everybody again at the Great White Throne Judgment. And then beyond, for those who love the Lord, will enjoy him and one another forever. That's going to be great.
Yeah.
And in just a couple weeks, I mean, that stuff, who knows when the Lord could return. But in just a couple of weeks from now, it's the Great American Eclipse. You know, the liberals don't like that name, the Great American Eclipse. They say that it's exclusive. How about the Mexicans? How about the Canadians? Aren't they Americans too? And I'm like, no, they're not Americans.
Yeah, they'll have no problem calling it the Mexican eclipse, because in 2024 there'll be another nice, you know, full solar eclipse.
Yeah.
You know, these things aren't super rare, actually. It's just so cool that it's going through the United
States. Through the entire continental United States, from Oregon to South Carolina, right in the middle of the day, in its totality, through this 20-mile swath.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
So if you're one of those end-of-the-earth conspiracists, you realize that these are actually fairly common, but not in this way, you know. But, don't think this is the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world. It's a cool eclipse.
If you do think it's the end of the world, Bob and I would love for you to send all your stuff to Real Science Radio. We could use, you know, because we don't have a church behind us, right? We don't have this big, huge mega church.
No.
So we could use your funds since the world's going
to
end.
Fred, you know, I'm looking forward to the Lord's return. I hope.
Oh, absolutely.
I hope it's today.
Yeah. Yep.
The sooner the better for me. But in his wisdom, he knows. And the Father will decide, you know, when to send the Son back.
The last verse of the Bible is, come, Lord Jesus, soon. You know, so it's okay to pray for it. Sometimes I feel like I'm being selfish,
you
know. I
hope and pray that it's soon.
Yeah.
And I know our kids want to wait till they get married. And every generation is like that. Sorry, kids. But when I have friends who are trying to convince me that we're in the very end of the last days, and I say to them, well, you've been telling me this for 30 years, so can you tell me when we're in the last minutes or the last seconds?
Yeah, don't tell me the last days.
Because we've been in the last days now for decades. But do you really believe the Lord is coming back in the next, like, few years? Absolutely, yes. Okay, then can I buy everything you own? I'll give you $1,000. Payable 5 years from today. 5 years. So you won't need it, right? You won't need it. And you get to use the $1,000 for ministry right now. Okay, payable 10 years from today. Okay, payable 20 years from today. You know, never.
I was going to say, has anyone ever taken me up on that?
I've been offering this for, like, I don't know, 25 years, Fred. No end times advocate has ever taken me up on it, which to me proves that they don't believe it.
Exactly.
They're trying to convince me so that they'll have a better chance of really believing it themselves.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It's kind of that conspiracy mentality, you know?
They a little bit.
I guess kind of misery loves company. Conspiracy loves company.
Yeah, that's right. But the Lord is coming back. We don't know when. We hope soon.
Yep.
And, you know, we always think, how could the world last another year? But imagine if we were alive in the 1940s in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Or in much of the world. And you would think, this has to be the last days. God's people, Israel, they're being persecuted. And you would just think it had to be.
Yeah, and then Israel reforms as a nation.
Yeah.
But prophesied here, in the Bible. So you think, hey, wow, that just happened. It's the end of the times.
But here we are generations later.
Yep.
That was on May 14th, 1948. And here we are generations later, and all the big end times ministry leaders, they all went to be with the Lord. So they were right. They're going to see the Lord soon.
Yeah.
Not the way they thought, though.
Exactly.
So how do we get on that tangent? Anyway, I'm looking forward to next week when we'll conclude our show on the Great American Eclipse. Until then, this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.